Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Joining me to break down all the market action is the author of the Dividend Titan Finance blog. He is Willie Kane. Good morning.
Good morning, Michelle.
Got the right mic. All right.
You know, I'm looking forward to the weekends because I want to bring my kids out for a duck tour. And that's something which hasn't gone for quite a while. I think the last time we actually went for a duck tour, which my kids loved, was somewhere 2-3 years ago.
Is this where you sit on an open air bus and then have a bird's eye view of everything?
Yeah, it's the amphibious vehicle where you can go on land and then into the waters.
Oh, that's too much fun. Oh, I have to go on one of these.
You should.
I should, yeah. All right, well, I hope you and your little ones enjoy the weekend.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Yeah, looking forward to it. All right, let's start this morning with one of the world's largest social media companies. The owner of Facebook and Instagram, Meta, shares of Mark Zuckerberg's company tumbling in after-hours market action. They're down more than 15%, despite first quarter profits that are more than double that of a year ago. On the surface, it looks like Meta's business is doing great. It netted $12 billion US dollars during the first 3 months of the year. That's up from less than $6 billion a year ago. So why are investors dumping Meta this morning, Willie? We'll answer that in a bit. But first up, help us understand what is driving Meta's profit surge.
Pretty interesting here that Meta platforms have actually beat analyst expectations, and they have actually much more positive results from their latest quarter, and really is driven from their advertising revenue. So that means a lot of their revenues is actually coming from selling their ads on their own platforms, and that was up an impressive 27% to $36 billion. On top of that, they have also driven down their own marketing costs that also helped to boost their net profit and their profit margin. So this is something interesting for Meta platforms, where if you consider a company where they are trying to actually grow their business, grow their platform in the face of more competitive advertising revenues, advertising from other competition, trying to get advertising business from other competitors, they've sort of come in a pretty good scenario here.
Most investors would be excited with such strong performance. So I guess the question is, why are Meta shares facing a sell-off? If you said, well, as good as the numbers are, they must have come in below expectations, that would be an applicable guess, but that's not the case here because Meta's earnings are actually better than expected. So why are Meta shares down 15% this morning, really?
Yeah, that's the funny thing, right? The market likes to focus on very funny attention. So in this case, while most of the revenues and profits are coming from advertising, the other side of the business where they are trying to build their own mixed reality or augmented reality like their goggles hasn't really taken off so far. And the company doesn't make money from their artificial intelligence business segment yet. And this is something which investors probably didn't like, and that sent the share price actually falling last night. This was despite the fact that Meta has also raised investor expectations, in the coming quarters from their improved financial performance.
Now, this seems like a mirror image almost of Tesla's results yesterday. You remember, Tesla reported poor earnings, but its shares soared on strong forward guidance. In this case, Meta's earnings are strong, but its forecast for the current quarter is still pretty weak. One reason for this is, as you say, the company is still investing in artificial intelligence, which has yet to show gains, but is expected to be a good move for the future. So what is your view on Meta, given what we know now?
Very interesting point here. I mean, it's not so much about Meta's artificial intelligence, which I feel is the growth potential here, but what I feel is, as long as Meta platforms is able to take advantage of what I call Metcalfe's law, which states that as more users or the number of connected users use their network of devices, the value of this network starts to increase exponentially or proportionally. So as long as Meta platforms is able to actually maintain the value of this platform here going forward, they are able to actually drive the profitability of the business. Because for me as an investor, what I want to see is not so much about the visions or the ambitions of their growth potential of artificial intelligence, but it's more so grounded on whether they are profitable in the long term. And that's really coming from advertising. And the more users are coming, the more users use their platform, the better for advertisers to want to actually advertise on their platform themselves.
The network effect, as we talked about. not too long ago. Coming up tomorrow, Google's parent company Alphabet reports earnings. Amazon is due to open its books next week. Meta's earnings forecast is sparking fears that other big tech companies may disappoint as well. Shares of Alphabet, Microsoft, Amazon all down 2-3% in after-hours trade, and shares of social media companies Snap and Pinterest are down more than 6%. All right, folks, let's take the conversation and bring it back here to Singapore, where real estate investment trusts are in focus. A whole bunch of REITs are reporting earnings. Let's take a look. We'll do it up or down style. Willie, first up, CapitaLand India Trust.
CapitaLand India Trust is an up for me after it has reported net property income of $49 million, and it was up 90% year-on-year due to higher total property income, although it was partially offset by increase in total property expense. So one thing which is interesting here is that this is one of the few Singapore REITs which owns foreign properties, and they have done pretty well in the face of higher interest rates. I mean, if you see for CapitaLand India Trust, historically, they have been paying quite consistent dividends or distribution per unit for their shareholders, rewarding their shareholders. So this positive result seems like positive news for investors or shareholders of the Singapore REIT Property Trust.
That's it. So 19% up for net property income for CapitaLand India Trust. Their portfolio includes IT parks, logistics park, an industrial facility, 4 data centers across 5 cities in India. Its share price down 13% this past year, but its net property income, as you heard, up nearly 20% in the first quarter. So maybe investors will start showing this REIT some love. Next up, let's stick with CapitaLand, but turn from India to China with CapitaLand China Trust.
Yeah, so this is an opposite for me, and it's a down for me from this. CapitaLand China Trust recorded a 7.7% drop in its net property income to about $59 million for the first quarter. And it was really because of low contributions from its logistics park and the absence of a one-off property tax refund from its business parks. Now, the thing about CapitaLand China Trust is that historically they have been a pure play, what I call a pure play retail REIT. That means they only invest mainly in China REITs, retail shopping malls. But because of the situation in China, they have since pivoted towards logistics, which is a pretty tricky situation because on one hand, CapitaLand China Trust has historically been more focused or specialized in retail malls. And it probably takes a different skill set, in my personal opinion, to actually manage logistics parks. And it seems like they are struggling in trying to grow this part of the business, and it's reflective on their first quarter results.
Great point. It makes a lot of sense. So CapitaLand China's trust portfolio includes 10 retail properties as well as those business and logistics parks. In all, it has nearly 20 properties from Harbin in the north to Guangzhou in the south. Its share price is down nearly 40% during the past year. Huge drop. And its first quarter profits not so great either. So definitely a down today for CapitaLand China Trust. Our third entry is Digital Core REIT. Now, this is a pure play data center REIT. Willie, is it an up or down in your books?
Yeah, Digital Core REIT is a down for me from its latest quarter. Distributable income was down 2% to $10.6 million, down from $10.9 million a year ago. Gross revenue was also down by 8% to about $24 million. And really, this comes at a time where interest rates in the US is still kept higher for longer. It seems like because the Fed is also trying to potentially delay rate cuts, and this has have a profound effect or impact on Digital Core REIT. However, if you see Digital Core REIT, one of the bright spots here is that they still have pretty quality data centers, and largely because they are well backed by a sponsor, which is Digital Realty, one of the largest sponsors or developers for data centers in the US itself. So on one hand, you probably are facing with sort of a weaker or struggling quarterly profits. But if you see for their data centers, they do own pretty quality properties there.
Digital Core REIT's distributable income is down nearly 2.5%. Its share price is off 5.5% since the beginning of the year. Finally, let's look at OUE REIT.
OUE REIT is an up for me after it posted net property income of $60 million, which is up 7%. Gross revenue was up 9.5%. And this was really driven by higher contributions from its Hilton Singapore Orchard, which just reopened in 2023 through a branding exercise here. So OUE REIT also owns some of the commercial properties in the CBD area as well. And because of after the reopening from the COVID pandemic, I think you have food foot traffic coming back. And at the same time, this work from home arrangement where people are used to be working from home now slowly are trickling back into the office. So this has sort of have a positive impact on the REIT itself. So this is an up for me.
I join you there. Shares of OUE REIT down 15% over the past year. But as you mentioned, its net property income rose nearly 7% in the first quarter, thanks in part to the reopening of the Hilton Hotel on Orchard Road, which is, by the way, where we hold our masterclasses. Have you signed up for yours yet?
You should.
You must. STSkills.sg for my Executive Presence Masterclass, which happens at Voco Orchard. If we take a step back, as you look over these latest numbers, what are your biggest takeaways when it comes to the REIT sector, Willie?
Yeah, I mean, this is no surprise because if you see for Singapore REITs, the expectation from the markets last year was that there would be a rate cut this year in 2024, but that didn't really happen. And that sort of saw a lot of the REIT share prices selling off. And on the other hand, the expectation is that if you see from the last year's high interest rates, that have impacted Singapore REITs across the board, in particular, more of the smaller REITs. So REITs which owns foreign assets outside of Singapore actually suffer the heaviest impact in their distribution per unit. Reason why is because of, number one, the stronger Singapore dollar.
Right.
That actually impacted overall high interest costs. And at the same time, because many of these foreign assets, they collect revenues overseas, when they convert this rented revenue back into Singapore dollar to pay distribution, the foreign currency weakness or the volatility has impacted shareholders. On the other hand, you also have some of this maturity which are coming due over the next 12 months in 2024 and potentially in 2025. So that has also affected some of these Singapore REITs as they seek to actually refinance at a much higher borrowing cost since last year. Now, one thing which I would actually pay attention to for some of these Singapore REITs is more so, not so much on the gearing ratio, but more on what I call the interest rate swaps. That means I want to see Singapore REITs having locked in interest rate swaps, you know, as long or as far out as possible. This means that as long as they are able to lock in interest rate at a fixed cost, at a fixed rate, so it doesn't matter whether the interest rates go up or interest rates go down, as long as they are able to actually maintain that fixed rate for as long as possible, that could allow them to control borrowing costs. So if you see, for example, like CapitaLand Integrated Commercial Trust, they have done pretty well, largely because they have managed to fix their borrowing costs. A large part of it has been fixed. So even if interest rates continue to go up, they still manage to pay sort of a manageable interest cost. On the other hand, you have Fraser Centrepoint Trust, which also reported results. However, their distribution fell slightly, largely because they have increased in their borrowing costs, largely also because interest rate swaps, many of it has actually expired. I beg your pardon. That's why they actually send borrowing costs slightly higher as well. And if you see from our earlier discussion, if you look at CapitaLand China Trust, Digital Core REIT, some of these borrowing costs have also edged higher. Now, one thing in particular, which I will highlight, of course, is the US commercial REITs listed in Singapore, the Singapore REIT, which owns US offices. I think that actually have bear the largest impact in terms of interest rates, the interest rate hike. Because a lot of the occupancies have actually fallen in US offices over the last 1-2 years, largely because of the pandemic. And also there's a structural change in the way people want to actually work. So more of the people in the US probably wants to work from home as opposed to be working in the offices these days. So that has actually impacted commercial properties.
Yeah, that's a short masterclass for you there in Singapore REITs and what are real investors looking out for, not so much the gearing ratios, but how long these REITs have managed to lock in interest rates for. Fantastic, Willie. Now it's time for corporate news and we do it up or down style. Round two. First up, I have to ask the requisite question. Are you a beer drinker?
Occasionally. Occasionally. With friends, definitely. If good friends, good beer is definitely a must.
Oh, it sounds good. Our first entry is Heineken.
Heineken is an up for me after it sells more beer in the first quarter and it has also stuck to its forecast for profit growth in 2024. So it seems like people coming out of the pandemic and with a more positive outlook in the economy, people also want to drink more beer. I mean, the world's second largest brewer has said that beer sales by volume rose 4.7% organically during the first quarter this year.
Heineken is selling more beer. First quarter earnings from the world's second largest brewer come in above expectations. Heineken shares are also up 6% over the past week. Is beer an inelastic good?
Well, I would say definitely, because whether if it's up whether the economy is up or down, people will still want to drink beer. I mean, if you are not feeling very well or you have a down, probably
drink
want
beer.
To drink beer.
Drown will make you feel better.
As what they say, as what a cliche comment always says, drown your sorrows, right?
Hey, well said. We're just kidding, by the way. Next up, Hilton.
Hilton is an up for me after he has reported a lift in his 2024 profit forecast on global travel demand. It has really banked on international travel demand, which offset some of its domestic travel in the US. The company has forecast 2024 adjusted profit of between $6.89 and $7 per share, which was an increased forecast. So this is an up for me.
Yeah, we know that more people are traveling these days, which is good for Hilton's business. And now Hilton is forecasting higher profits for the year. Hilton shares, meanwhile, are up 12% since the beginning of the year and 45% over the past 12 months. We've taken a look at Heineken. We've taken a look at Hilton. Let's stick with the H's. And this time, it's with toy maker Hasbro.
Wow, Hasbro has been a long time coming because it's been a while since I looked at toy companies. And this is a down for me after it reported a smaller than expected drop in its first quarter sales. Although it has beat profit estimates earlier last evening from leaner inventories and steady digital gaming revenue.
Hasbro shares jumped nearly 12% overnight, though investors seem excited about something. Can't be Play-Doh. I wonder what they're still into now, Hasbro toy maker. Well, they're cleaning up their inventories, looking at cost efficiencies, and that hopefully could impact operating margin expansion. But
yeah, it's quite interesting here where if you see for Hasbro, right? Mm. Historically, a lot of these toy manufacturers or these retail companies, what happened was back 2-3 years ago, you have the supply chain disruption. So that sent a lot of some of these retail companies, toy making companies, their inventory started to accumulate.
Mm.
And as a result, they have actually forced a lot of cost cutting. So a lot of these toy companies, they had actually discounts the last couple of years, and that actually didn't bode well for these companies. However, if you see in the recent quarter or even last year, many of these companies are actually lowering their projections. That means lowering their production lead time in order to clear out some of their inventory. So they are actually looking for a much higher profit margin going forward. But I guess it still takes time to transit from a lower margin period where they're trying to do a lot of discounting to clear away the excess inventory to trying to increase the average selling price going forward here.
Brilliant. So it's leaner stockpiles, so to speak. Also interesting for Hasbro, they have a steady digital gaming revenue. I didn't know that Hasbro was also in the gaming segment, and they have this game called Wizards of the Coast, and that has grown 7% in the quarter. Interesting. All right. You can see I want to hang around Hasbro because it's a lot of fun. But let's turn to the drug maker Biogen, which sells an Alzheimer's drug called Leqembi.
Mm. So for Biogen, it's an up for me after it tops profit estimates. And as it cut its cost, it seems like its Alzheimer's drug also launched. Its recent Alzheimer's drug launch has also started picking up as well. So this is an up for me here.
Definitely. And very exciting to look at the possibilities for Leqembi. Biogen grossed $2.3 billion during the first quarter of the year. Its bottom line numbers are coming in above expectations as well. So really an up for Biogen. Its shares have been sold off this past year. So they're in a bear market. But overnight, Biogen shares rallied. Close up 4.5%. All right, let's step away from corporate numbers and talk share buybacks, which investors love. They tend to boost share prices, put more money in the hands of investors. But companies appear to be announcing fewer share buybacks. Research by the Janus Henderson Group indicates share buybacks are down 14%. What are you seeing?
Yeah, this is a down for me. Historically, if you see over the last 13, 15 years where the Fed has been, you know, on a stimulus measure here, it has lowered borrowing costs. And many of these companies took advantage of the close to zero borrowing costs to borrow money and then try to buy back shares. So if you see over the last 15 years, corporates have been aggressively buying back shares. That's why, you know, you see share prices have actually gone up pretty well. But now with higher interest rates, this has sort of impacted the decline of share buybacks. That means now companies are thinking, hey, if it's more expensive to borrow money to buy back my shares, I'm just going to slow down the pace at which I buy back my shares from borrowed money. Because you've seen many companies like McDonald's, for example, they have been doing this. Many of the other blue chips in the US have also been doing this as well to reduce the number of share count on their stock. But you see now that they are stopping this, they're probably going to make use of the cash, accumulated cash, which they borrow to actually pay back some of their debt, lower some of their debt in this case. And that could actually lower the share buybacks.
Let's turn to markets now. Singapore stocks enjoy a pretty strong rally for the third straight session. The SDI is closing in on the 3,300 mark. It finished up 0.6% at 3,293. Two of this year's worst performing blue chips, DFI Retail and Seatrium, led the gainers list. DFI Retail closed up 4.3%. Seatrium rose a little bit more than 3.5%. Let's take a look at DFI Retail just for a bit. It wouldn't surprise me, listeners, if you've been in at least one of, not more, of their stores recently. Recently, they operate 7-Elevens here in Singapore, as well as over in Hong Kong and Macau and Guangdong. And they also own Maxim's restaurants, Cold Storage supermarkets, Guardian pharmacies, even IKEA stores, not the ones listed here, though. I mean, not the ones here. Despite a stable of well-known retail chains, DFI share price is down 36% over the past year. The stock hit a one-year low last Friday at $1.75 a share. So why is DFI Retail the runt of the litter, so to speak? I mean, why is it the worst performing SDI constituent over the past year?
I think a couple of reasons here. I think the main one is probably the way it does its operations. I mean, it being the second largest or one of the largest supermarket retail chains in Singapore, alongside NTUC and Sheng Siong, DFI Retail has actually done pretty well in terms of managing their stores. But the issue here, if you turn back time over the last 5-10 years ago, what happened was that they have some issues or problems with their strategy in terms of their operations. So many times the management has said that they are trying to actually turn around or do a strategic reorganization of their business. So it does seem that they have some issue trying to, number one, control costs. Number two, in terms of their niche and their target segment, I think DFI is in a state where they are trying to compete for affluent customers, but they are also facing competition from, let's say, NTUC as well. So that has sort of impacted the way that they have actually done their operations. And don't forget, for supermarkets, that's actually one of their biggest driver in their revenues. So for dividend players, if you are talking about DFI as a dividend stock, dividends have actually started coming down year after year over the last couple of years here.
It looks like investors have been bargain hunting this week. For the moment, at least, DFI Retail bottomed out last Friday. Since then, its shares up more than 6% to $1.93 a share. I'm going to put you on the spot. Is this just a bear market bounce for DFI Retail, or do its shares present good value at their current levels?
I think it depends on what sort of investor are you. If you are a short-term trader, then maybe, based on this momentum, might be good news, because last year it did report pretty steady results or profits. Not the best, but something which keeps the market happy. However, if you are on a longer-term approach as an investor, then you might want to be more careful, because based on its dividends, based on its profit, it does seem that they are struggling with their competitive advantage amongst its supermarket peers.
He's DT Dividend Titan himself. I can't believe tomorrow is our last chat. I've so been enjoying these. Thank you so much, Willie.
Thank you, Michelle.
Willie Kang there.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.